Welcome to Hard Mode. This startup caper is hard work. The startup founder reality is problem solving at its most extreme. A series of U-turns, struggles, setbacks, and adjustments on the path to creating tech-enabled businesses that customers and users love. Join us on this storytelling series with a roll call of technology company founders, investors, operators, and outliers as they share anecdotes of the journey towards sustainable growth. Hosted and curated by the team at Tractor Ventures. Welcome to
Hard Mode.
Hard Mode.
Hard Mode.
Welcome to this episode of Hard Mode featuring Multitudes founder and CEO, Lauren Pete. Multitudes is a team analytics tool that helps with engineer metrics, feedback, and team building. Lauren discusses being inspired by the collective potential of teams, the need for psychological safety, the early grind in developing Multitudes, and pinch me moments when building a startup. This episode is hosted by Tractor Ventures co-founder and CEO, Matt Allen. Enjoy.
Lauren, welcome to the Hard Mode podcast.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Very excited to talk to you. Full disclosure up front, shareholder in Multitudes, so, you know, been tracking your journey along the way. Excited to have you on the podcast. Let's kick this off and let's talk about the path that led you here. Tell us a little bit about Multitudes.
Yeah. So I think, first of all, we love having you as part of the journey with us. So I'll just share that back. And yeah, the journey that led here, I think, you can always start these stories at different points, but for me, a really core thing is that I have been fortunate to work with lots of teams all around the world, everywhere from Silicon Valley and working with large tech companies to much smaller teams, and then working with startups in the Middle East and more recently working with teams out here in New Zealand. And one of the things that I noticed along the way is that some of the teams were amazing. It was just things were humming and you knew everyone had each other's backs and it was working well together. And it, you know, the teams were so good that it almost didn't feel like work. And then some of the teams, it was just harder than it needed to be. And even sometimes there would be people where I could see that they were incredibly talented and gifted, but maybe other people on the team had assumptions about what they could and could not do, or, you know, they were just other barriers and reasons why those people were being underestimated. And so I could see kind of that lost potential, both not only for that person and what they could be doing and all that they could contribute, but also for the team as a whole and what the team could be doing together if everyone was working well and the talents were being appreciated. And so that was something, it was just a thing I noticed. And so I was going through my career and have always been really interested both in people and in numbers and math and but I just kept noticing all these team things. And then along the way, when I got to New Zealand, I ended up founding a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultancy. And so I was working with lots of development teams in particular, and global ones, and started to see not only this point of how different teams come together can be really impactful on what they're able to do, but also kept seeing in practice and also in the data that the thing that matters most is all those little things that we do in the day-to-day. So not the big flashy things or the one-offs, but just the small things of like, who are we actually listening to in meetings and who's actually getting feedback on their work and who's getting pushed and maybe overworked. And so they're just too exhausted to do their best work. And so anyway, it was kind of through this question of how can we help every team kind of be their best? And this observation that these little behaviors we do have such an impact, and also that we now have so much rich digital data on those behaviors, that it kind of, you know, when you put it together, ended up becoming what Multitudes is today, which is team analytics software for software development teams. And it's all about both the team performance side. So we look at key DevOps metrics there, all the way to the well-being side and the culture side around who might be at risk of burnout or who's not getting enough support on the work that they do. So yeah, I mean, that's really, that's the journey in brief.
That's very cool. So, like, let's talk about sort of the reality of getting Multitude to this point. I know you're obviously backed by external funders, and there's an impressive list of people there. Tell us a little bit about sort of the journey of the business up until today.
Yeah. So, at the very beginning, I knew that I wanted to bootstrap for as long as possible, because I knew I wanted to be able to get as far as we could, prove as much as we could, and that it would put us in a better place for when we did come around to raising investment. And so what that meant in practice was that back in 2020, I was still running my diversity, equity, and inclusion consultancy. So I was doing that a few days a week, and then I was not paying myself. And then the other days of a week, I was working on Multitudes and working with a team of contractors to get the very first versions of it built. And so that was a grind. It was, as we will all too well recall, it was the year that we were figuring out what COVID meant. And in New Zealand, like many other parts of the world, we were in and out of lockdowns. And so it was a grind. It was 6 to 7 days of work a week. The financial side was also, you know, that started to wear me down after a little while too. And so, that was definitely a tough period. And fortunately got to the place where we were starting to see some great wins with our early customers. And it also had become clear to me that for me and the rest of the team, it was going to be unsustainable to kind of carry the other work that we were doing alongside all the Multitudes work. And so that's what prompted the investment raise at the end of 2020, which was a huge turning point for us, like for me and for the team to be able to come on board full time. And so, of course, there's been other challenges since, but that was a big one at the beginning, was getting through that initial period.
Yeah, the old agency to product flip up is a challenge, right? It's nice to be able to prove that you've built something, but people that are backing software companies don't really take that into consideration when it comes to valuations and all that kind of juicy stuff when it comes to that sort of things. But it is a good way to get going. So, you know, that grind I think you speak of there is typical to a lot of people that have had to run things in parallel while they boot up. So congratulations on that. It's always a challenge. And I think you probably pushed it to the as far as you possibly could before breaking, which hopefully meant that your raise was a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it did really pay off when it came time for the raise, for sure.
Cool. So tell us about this 10X team concept that you talk about.
Yeah. So by way of intro, if I go back to that story and that observation I'd had before, where some teams, when they came together, I could see it. I saw it happen so many times, where they'd come together and they would just do amazing work. And then other teams would come together and not do great work. I, in the background, was really curious about this. And so had been doing my own digging into the research. And one of the pieces of research that early on really stood out was the Project Aristotle research from Google, which essentially said that the number one thing for a high-performing team is to have psychological safety. And so that really resonated with the things that I'd seen when I started to think about the trends across the teams where it had worked and it hadn't worked. And more than that, there's even a broader set of research that shows that the team's dynamics are really key for that team's ability to work well together. So the bigger point is that a team is not simply the sum of its parts. It's not person A plus person B. There's something that can either be additive or subtractive in how those team members come together. And so that has turned into this 10X team concept that the Multitudes team has been talking about. And it's really a nudge for us to go from, in the past, this focus on the individual and is the individual performing at an XYZ level, and instead looking at the team and how we as a team are accomplishing our goals together or not. And there's a lot that comes along with that. So, you know, one, it impacts how we think about what we measure and saying, okay, well, let's do measures that are looking first and foremost at the team as a whole and is the team accomplishing its goals. And then it also impacts how we manage things. So in the world where we were focusing so much on the individual, things like team players and people who do that so important but underappreciated glue work to document things or make sure people are getting feedback. Those can get lost in that world. But in the world of a 10X team, those are critical. Your team players are the ones who they're the fabric of the team, and the people doing the glue work are, they're key for making sure that everyone else on the team is able to do the work that they need to do. So those are some of the things that shift. And ultimately, when we think about how can we go about building a 10X team, since that's, for us and so many of the companies we work with, that's the real question is, cool, we want these high performing teams. How do we get there? For us, it's ultimately about having both really high expectations, which in startup land we do, but also making sure that the support that we provide for our teams is just as high.
Cool. So you mentioned in there's like psychological safety. Like, can you open that up a little bit? And when you think about the best teams you've worked with, like, what does that feel like?
Yeah. So on the psychological safety side, it's that people know that they will be valued and that they will be supported. And it shows up in things like people feeling comfortable sharing their views and their perspectives, even disagreeing with others. And it also shows up in people feeling more comfortable facing failures and knowing that they're not going to be blamed or judged, or knowing that the other people on the team will see the learnings that came from it and the intent of the person who had gone out and tried whatever it was that they tried. So that's on the side of psychological safety. And I'll just add here too, the psychological safety piece, I see as being very closely tied with equity and inclusion work as well, because if a team's not equitable, if someone and an aspect of someone isn't being valued or isn't being recognized, then of course they're not going to have psychological safety on that team, because they'll be able to feel it. They'll be able to feel that they're being underestimated. So that's just a side note there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That underestimation, I think, is so easy, especially when people are coming into teams that they haven't, they're new, right? There's a term in computer science called idempotent, which means, it's, if you change it, it's different. So, you add someone to the team, you remove someone from the team, and it's effectively a new organization again. What's your advice to people who have to deal with that, right? Teams change, you can get in a real cool groove with your people, and then something happens, someone comes or someone goes, and you have to start all over again. Like, is there any way to solve for that? Or is it just start again?
I love this question. So I think there's a couple, I might split it out into two cases where that happens, because it's different in approach. So one is, and this happens quite a lot on product and engineering teams, where there's changes to maybe a stream of work or a sub team, because you want to mix it up, or you need a different composition of skill sets for whatever the piece of work is. And so the sub team changes, but you still got your broader unit of the product and engineering team. And then so that's one case. And then the second case is maybe we've hired some new people and they're coming onto our team. So the first case, if I speak to that, there's a lot that can be done around the broader team, that broader product and engineering team, and the environment that's being shaped there. And that's where I think some of these cross-organization things, like setting really strong values and putting them into practice, or even having those the cross-team bonding moments and social hangouts, those are all really good for setting some broader norms across the organization as a whole. And so those ones, even if then people are moving across sub-teams, there's still some underlying norms about how we work in this organization that can be true and that people can then build on top of. So that's one nudge on that side. And then on the side of what happens when we're bringing new people into our teams, I've seen some really great things there. One of our team members actually at Multitudes has been doing a bit of research lately into open source communities and what helps people feel really excited and engaged and wanting to contribute. And one of the things that's really popped up there is that initial welcome. So when someone first joins hey, it's great to have you here. And maybe the first contribution that someone makes, like the first pull request that they do, other people jumping in and saying, hey, we're so glad that you've done this, or making sure to give them timely feedback. And one other thing I'll just add on that, along the note of what does that initial welcome look like so that they know that they're really part of that team, is another org that we've worked with actually at Multitudes is, and they're really big on kudos. And so I know that one of the founders for every new person within the first day tries to find something where she can give them a kudos and say, kudos being great work. You know, we thank you. You did XYZ thing really well. So those are a few ideas.
Very cool. So you're on our podcast. It's called Hard Mode. What's hard mode for you? You know, when something that you really sort of struggled, hit the wall and overcame it, and were you able to use it as an advantage moving forwards?
Yeah, there's so many of these. And one I can share. So the overall thing I'll say first is both the best and sometimes the hardest part of being a founder is that I'm always getting to do something that I have never done before. And someone told me this early on, and it's been so true, that right as a founder, it often feels like right when you get good at something, that's when you have to go figure out the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so one example I can give is last year, the big focus for us was launching our beta product. And I had never been a product owner before. And so it was a role that I was stepping into. And I had my own worries about, am I doing this right? Am I going to do a good job with it? And also, to be really upfront, we raised the round of investment, and then we're saying, okay, great, you know, when are we going to launch the beta? And I, at the time, and I'll be upfront, and you know, I've learned since, but at the time, it was sort of December, and I was like, yep, you know, sweet, 6 months, that sounds pretty good. You know, we'll have the beta launch by June. And so I said that, and you know, people listening will probably smile because I did not do the diligence and more of the planning around, well, actually, how long is it going to take? But anyway, I communicated that externally. And then surprise, surprise, we got into it. And there were some pieces that were taking longer and some things that I hadn't anticipated. And so that was hard, was having this deadline that I'd set and figuring out how to communicate it with the team and with external stakeholders like investors. And you know, meanwhile, kind of having this little thought process in my head of like, okay, yeah, am I doing this right? Kind of the self-doubt. So that was a big one. And in terms of how I got through it, one, I've learned some great lessons around planning and communicating changes to the plan earlier rather than later. So that was a good one for me. And then the other big thing, and this has helped me so much since, is just asking for help. And I now have a rule, just an informal rule for myself, but any meeting I'm in, if I get to the end of it and I haven't asked for something, if I haven't asked for help in some way, then I haven't done my job in that meeting. And so anyway, what that looks like for this big beta launch was me finding some really great product owners. And one of them in particular, I ended up setting up chats with her every 2 weeks. And so she became the person I kind of go to and bounce ideas off of. And then we launched it, and the launch, it was a little bit late. It was a couple months late, but ended up going well. And I've learned some important lessons.
That's launching stuff is hard. Well done on getting there. Let's just talk about you for a little bit. So where did younger Lauren think she'd end up as far as your career might go early on? And are we there? Are we somewhere different?
We are somewhere very different. So when I was younger, I mentioned I've always been really fascinated by people. And so one of the things early on I thought I would do was go into international development work. And I did that for a little bit. I spent a summer in Nicaragua working at a clinic. So I, for a good year or so in there in university, thought that I would go be an international health doctor. And then fortunately spent a summer actually working in a clinic and realized that was not the pathway for me. So better to not do med school and find that out. Mm. I've explored most career paths. I spent another summer doing some work at a law firm because I thought maybe I'd go down that pathway. At another point, thought I would go get a PhD in economics. And so I had a year and a half where I was conducting independent research and going down the econometrics, so the stats for econ pathway. And you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's actually for me a quite long list, but I think the key thing that younger me really cared about was wanting to make things better in some way and being really fascinated by people and how we can unlock the most we can, like really, you know, lift people up. And a core thing that I've always held to be true and is still true with the work at Multitudes is there's just too many big problems in the world for any one group or, you know, even like a small group of people to solve. And so it's always felt to me like the best bet for all of us, if we want to get to a better place for humanity and for our environment, is to, for me, the unlock has always felt like, let's set up as many people as possible to just be the best they can be. And then they'll go be their amazing selves and solve some important problems. And then at the end of the day, we'll all be better off.
I like that. It's a fairly sounds generic, but I think it is a amplifier. But you know, sort of rolling on from that, you've now built a high performing product and engineering team in and of itself inside Multitudes. Like, what's been the best part about that?
Yeah, I mean the team is my favorite part of doing this. There's a lot of things that I really love about this founder journey, but the team is by far the highlight. So, I mean, things that I love, one is knowing that we have each other's backs. And where that comes up is we don't always agree. We'll have product decisions we're making or company directions that we're debating where people will have different opinions and sometimes we'll have some strong different opinions. And so what's so lovely about that, the trust side of things and knowing that we have that shared vision of values is even when we disagree, I know we're all doing it because we want the best for this team and for this company at the end of the day. And so it just like on the disagreement side and the debate side, it just helps that go more smoothly. So that's one piece that I love. The other piece that I love about it is because of the nature of a startup, not only am I doing new things, all sorts of other people on the team get to do new things they've ever done before. And that high support, high expectations thing I was talking about before, it's so cool to see that when there's a big goal in front of someone, but there's tons of support around them and they know that the people around them, you know, we're not going to judge you if you fail. We're going to help you learn from it and figure out where we go next. I've just seen it over and over that I and others end up doing so much more than I think that we would have thought we could beforehand. So I love that kind of the, like surprising ourselves with what we're able to do. And just kind of like knowing that in those hard moments, we're going to do the best we can to get through it together.
Awesome. So, you know, in those hard moments or over that time, has there been any of those sort of pinch me moments? What's the one that stands out in your mind where you're like, I can't believe this is actually happening?
Yeah. So I'm going to share a recent one that's top of mind. So we've got we have a really amazing group of investors. And one of them, and I'll say her name in a second, one of them in particular, before I ever met her, I knew her story. I had read her book. I had followed her work. I'd emulated parts of her work. And so when I was raising the round, I got to meet her over a video call. And then about a month ago, I was out in Silicon Valley and I got to meet Ellen Pao in person. And that was a real pinch me moment. And for those who don't know, she's the former CEO of Reddit. She brought forward a really important sexual harassment lawsuit against Kleiner Perkins. And then she now runs Project Include, which does really amazing work around diversity, equity, and inclusion in tech. And so, that was just sort of a like, wow, how did I end up doing something where I now get to meet someone who's such a role model for me? So that was huge. That's the most recent one.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about what happened. Was it, did you met your hero? Did it turn out the way you expected?
Yeah. So I can be really honest that when these people who in my mind are celebrities, I had actually a little bit of worry of like, oh, is she going to be as good in real life? Like, you know, have I built this up too much in my head? And the other thing I wasn't sure about too is, and again, you know, remember I've read Ellen Pao's book. She's been through some hard things. You know, there's been some big challenges, and she's had to deal with some trolls and, you know, just some unpleasant people along the way. And so I also wasn't sure, you know, it'd be normal for that to have an impact on somebody. And so what was amazing was just how warm and kind she was. And the big thing I'll say is I'm so used to in the work meetings, just getting down to the work and talking about, okay, you know, how are things tracking? And here's the you know, big things that are top of mind right now that we need to solve. And there were a couple moments along the way when she just paused and checked in on how I was doing with regard to, you know, a particular challenge and how I was feeling about something. And so I really appreciated that reminder that I am also a human trying to navigate all these startup challenges.
Oh, man. Yeah, that resonates. I think this whole leadership CEO first time thing, Caper, is does your head in on a daily basis. It certainly does mine in, trying to figure out whether we know what we're doing or not, which the general answer is no. It seems to me, you know, you just spoke about someone you admire, but is there anyone else? Like who else is in the forefront of your mind when you think about people that you admire and look up to, or maybe businesses?
Yeah. So the people and the businesses I admire most, especially in the startup space, are the ones that are thinking, that have gone beyond kind of the innovation with their product, because that's a given, right? We're all trying to do something innovative and important and different with our products. But what gets me most excited is the people who then turn that same innovation to how they're thinking about building an organization, or on the investment side, how they think about investing in startups. And so some of the examples that I love are Buffer, for example, who's done a ton around the transparency with their salaries to a very radical level. But you know, that one, part of why I love that is we know that the more transparent we are with salaries, the less negotiation we make people do with salaries, the more fair and equitable they are for people across the team. So that's one example there. On the funding side, there's the Zebra Movement, which if you haven't heard of it, go look them up. And they're all about how can we structure both ecosystems of support and also funding models that will work well for businesses that are weaving impact into what they do, and also businesses that are led by a more diverse set of founders. And then, I mean, along the lines of that, I love what you all are doing with Tractor Ventures, with revenue-based financing too. And it just, you know, we don't have to do the same old way of funding startups too.
Yeah, we certainly believe that founders should have the choice, you know, and the capital you pull into your business can do different jobs, and has different expectations attached to it. You know, I think we sometimes forget that, you know, the people who are investing in our companies quite often have business models of their own. And if our path and their path diverges, it ends up in a bit of anxiety. So certainly something to think about there. I certainly love those people that you've mentioned as well. I think the diversity in, you know, why you start a company and what success looks like is hopefully becomes easier to have that conversation with people around as we move forwards. So speaking of that, what's next for Multitudes, and what can we help with at the moment?
Yeah. So the big thing I'll say in terms of what next is we are in beta and bringing in beta testers. And so if you're part of a software development team and want to try it out and give us some feedback, we would love that. And on the product side, one of the big things we're thinking about now is how can we make it easier for people to know what they need to know now and how they can take action on it. So one example of that is we've released these dynamic one-on-one guides where someone can say, great, I'm about to have this one-on-one. What do I need to talk to them about? And then we've taken our behavioral insights and then pulled out things. And we've got some smart data science with the questions, where we'll say, great, you know, for this person, they did a lot of out-of-hours work, so let's ask them about their work-life balance, for example. So on the product side, you know, just welcome beta testers and really doubling down on the how do we help you take action. So it's not just insights on a page, but something that leads to changes that help the team get better. So that's a big one there. And then also thinking a lot about growth, particularly in the U.S., we've really loved working with the New Zealand and Australian companies that we've been working with. But you can tell from my accent, I'm from the States, and it's such a big market that we're really investing in that one now too. So yeah, that's a hint of what's ahead.
That's very exciting. Lauren, founder and CEO of Multitudes, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for all your great questions.
No worries. See ya.
Bye.
That was Hard Mode with Multitudes founder and CEO Lauren Peet, in conversation with Tractor Ventures co-founder and CEO Matt Allen. You can find Multitudes online at www.multitudes.co and on Twitter at multitudesco. Thanks for joining us. See you on the next episode.